Interview with Professor Harry Ruja, October 26, 1981.
First of all, I just wanted to find, what were the basic attitudes toward Dr. Steinmetz and the controversy that surrounded him among his colleagues and among students and the public and that sort of thing. So maybe I could start out with his colleagues since you were one. What was the general attitude?
Well, I would say that probably 80% of the colleagues didn't care one way or the other.
Really?
Maybe that's a little too high, 70%. The remaining 20 or 30%, I guess they were split half and half between those who sympathized with him, supported him, and those who hated his guts.
So the campus was essentially moderate, though.
The campus was essentially neutral. It did not take the initiative in getting him fired. On the contrary, I understood, and I don't have it from direct knowledge, but from things that I remember Steinmetz having told me, that Love, who was president at the time, on the whole felt that he was not being discharged properly, that the procedures being used against him were improper, put it that way.
I see. But did Dr. Love think that he should have been discharged for one reason or another anyway?
I don't know, and I don't think Dr. Love expressed himself on that issue ever. President Love was very jealous of academic prerogatives. By that I mean that he wanted to make sure that they were well protected. And he had a considerable respect for the faculty as a whole. At the faculty meetings he would frequently say, and it made us feel a little bit uncomfortable because we felt that it wasn't deserved, that this was the best faculty of any university or college throughout the United States.
Strong statement.
Right.
Okay. How about the students? What did the students feel about him?
Well, I remember something that Steinmetz told me kind of in a jocular mood. He said, the question was raised, to what extent did Steinmetz propagandize his students? And one student was asked then by a member of the investigating committee, would you say that Steinmetz unduly influenced you? And he was said, he did not influence me at all.
I see. Yeah, I read, went back and looked at several copies of the Aztec, and looked at the editorials, and found them both ways.
Yeah.
And I just wondered if was there a general trend one way or the other with the students?
Well, the editorial views of the Aztec are not necessarily representative of the student. You know, it's the same with the student government. The student government doesn't represent the students. Just officially it represents the government, the students. But in terms of being an accurate cross-sample of the student population, it's not that at all. And the same way with the people who busy themselves with the Aztec, they don't necessarily represent an accurate cross-section of the student population. So in large part, it just depends on who happens to be editor at a particular time, what kind of opinions you're going to find expressed. I would say it was my impression that the students found Steinmetz a little bit on the dull side as a professor. He did not arouse them. He did not provoke them. Apparently, he did not use his classroom to any great extent for propaganda purposes. And in fact, that was not the accusation. No accusation was made against him, you understand.
All right.
All that happened was that he was asked whether he was a member of the Communist Party, and because he refused to answer, he was discharged on the grounds of insubordination. He had been asked that same question by the House on American Activities Committee, and he had refused to answer ask questions then. Mm-hmm. But they did not cite him for contempt. He suffered no penalties as a result of that refusal. Except that once that the State Board of Education discovered that he was not answering their question, they decided to pose the same question to him and get rid of him.
Through the Luckel Act, which gave them the permission to the power to fire him.
Right. Now, incidentally, only one person was fired under the Luckel Act, and that was Harry Steinmetz.
Only one. And it's still on the books.
I thought the Supreme Court had declared it to be unconstitutional. But I don't know. You may be right.
I looked in the government code, and it was still there.
Still there.
As of 1979.
Yeah. Well, so you probably are right then.
So only one person. That's really...
It was called the Steinmetz Law, mm-hmm. not the Luckel Act, the Steinmetz Act.
So it was pretty well understood that the act was written with the intent of getting Dr. Steinmetz.
There's no question that Steinmetz made enemies in the community. Mm-hmm. Not so much in the university, because at the university he attended to his professional obligations.
He did.
But he was very active in the community mm-hmm. in a variety of ways. And he was not always discreet and tactful in his speech. So he offended quite a lot of people. There was one person in particular who was head of the American Legion.
Foster.
That's Harry the one, Foster. Harry Foster.
And George Fisher, who was, what was he at the time? He was also involved in the American Legion, something else though he was too. But yeah.
Well, I don't know that other name, but the name Harry Foster, that kept coming up all the time. Mm-hmm.
Okay, you've already touched on some of these things. I wanted to give you a quote from his letter of dismissal, reason why he was dismissed. Failed and refused to perform the normal and reasonable duties of his position.
Well, that's a bunch of baloney. As far as meeting his classes, as far as teaching the courses in the standard way, not brilliantly, but mm-hmm. adequately, no question that Simons did that. Now, occasionally, he would absent himself from a class to attend some particular kind of a meeting. And my impression was that generally he arranged to have the class covered. Mm-hmm. But of course, that was not in accordance with the rules.
I see.
He did not have that privilege of absenting himself from a class, whether he arranged for somebody to cover the class or not. Mm. Now, these days, things are a little bit more liberal. I don't even know whether the regulations are changed. I think you are still obligated to meet your class, and you're not free to arrange for a substitute. But we do it. I've done it. If somebody wants to fire me for having done it, I don't care. I'm quitting at the end of the semester anyway.
So go ahead and do it all you want. Okay.
But apparently, he was obligated to meet his class in person. Otherwise, he would be deducted, which was one thing, but also, I think, it represents an infraction of the rules.
Mm, I see. Okay, so you wouldn't consider his behavior unprofessional, except perhaps for those few times that maybe he left?
Emphatically not.
Okay.
On the whole, he discharged his responsibilities as conscientiously as the average professor, I would say.
You told me a little bit about how President Love felt about him. How did President Heppner feel about him?
Heppner didn't care for him.
Didn't? There was an animosity there?
Yeah, there was. And Steinmetz didn't care for Heppner. Hmm. And when Steinmetz didn't care for somebody, he let that person know. So he rubbed Heppner the wrong way. But Heppner didn't take an active role in getting him discharged.
No, because that was after his presidency.
Well, he had been president during Steinmetz's tenure for the most part. Mm-hmm. Steinmetz, I think, not sure when he came in exactly.
1930.
I think Heppner was already president, wasn't he?
I think it was 35.
That Heppner became president?
I think so, yeah.
Oh, I see. So then he was on the faculty during Heppner's predecessor.
Mm. But the animosity didn't have any reflection on what eventually happened to Dr. Steinmetz.
No.
No. Yeah. Okay. Let's see. My paper is revolving around the terms, the concepts of subversion and loyalty. Do you think that Dr. Steinmetz was guilty of subversion or disloyalty?
I'm confident that he was not guilty of subversion. That is to say, he did not take an active part in overthrowing or plotting to overthrow the government. Mm-hmm. I'm pretty confident of that. Now, as far as disloyalty is concerned, that's a kind of a indefinite term. I think he probably was a Marxist. Whether he was a member, an official member of the Communist Party, I don't know. I never asked him, and he never volunteered that information to me. But there was no question at all, and he didn't make a secret of it, that he was very sympathetic to the Marxist point of view. And after he retired also, he led tours to the Soviet Union.
Sure. Yeah.
He once won some kind of a prize for an article that he wrote for a Soviet magazine.
Hmm. So he could be considered disloyal in the language of the times.
Definitely.
In the language of the law, under the Luckel Act and that sort of thing.
Correct. That's correct.
But philosophically, perhaps he was not disloyal.
In the broader sense, yeah.
I see. Right. Okay. That fits in great. Was he a threat, therefore?
Of course not.
No threat.
That was ridiculous.
Not subverting students' minds?
No.
That sort of thing?
No. Okay. No. I never knew of a student who said, Steinmetz made me a communist. Steinmetz made me a radical. Steinmetz made me a revolutionary.
Now, I heard about these study clubs that were allegedly held at his home. Do you know anything about those?
No, but it wouldn't have surprised me if he did hold such sessions.
I heard they were, this is from Foster, the interview with Foster, I heard this, that he had these study clubs at his home, and people would go assuming they were about psychology.
Oh.
Or philosophy, and they weren't. They were talking about political subjects. And
what he does on his own.
Yeah.
In the privacy of his own home.
Okay.
So,
okay.
I don't see anything wrong with that.
Do you think his dismissal was fair at all?
Definitely not. I wrote letters to various places. I wrote a letter in support of him. I wrote a letter to the Aztec.
I read it, I think.
Oh, yeah. No, I was one of his stronger supporters.
Okay. Do you think he was a victim of the times?
That's a good way of putting it. I think there was a kind of hysteria in the air at mm-hmm. the time. And there were enough people in power so that they could implement that hysteria.
The fact that he was conspicuous because he was not only liberal, but he was active politically, really
made
him
stand out. I wouldn't say that he was liberal.
Out.
I would say that he was radical.
Radical.
I would call him a radical in terms of his economic and political philosophy.
Hmm. Okay.
And that didn't sit right with lots of people in those days.
Because there was a conservative tide.
Right.
The conservatives' heyday, actually.
Yeah.
Anyone who would step out of that line would be conspicuous.
That's right.
In a bad way. Okay.
The American Legion style of Americanism was in vogue. That is to say, saluting the flag, standing true blue for everything American, being contemptuous of everything alien and foreign.
I see. Do you think in any way Dr. Steinmetz brought it upon himself?
He was probably more too outspoken for his own good.
Hmm.
And also, he was not tactful in expressing his disagreement with various people.
I read some hearings, the HUAC hearings.
Oh, yes.
They got pretty heated on both sides.
Right. Well, I think even before that, why did he create so much hostility against him in the community? He exposed himself unnecessarily to that kind of negative feeling.
Mm-hmm. What kind of attitude political attitude did San Diego have? It was a very conservative attitude.
Oh,
at the
yes.
time.
Yes. San Diego has been for a long time a Navy town. Mm-hmm. And what still is true of Coronado was especially significant in those days because it was a smaller community. Coronado is a favorite place for retirement, for retired admirals. Mm-hmm. And it's still true today. So, the Navy town, and the town is rather small. You didn't have the University of California at San Diego, which brought in a lot of liberal people. You didn't have the student riots, the attitude that it's desirable to express some disagreement with standard positions.
Mm-hmm. Hello. Break this up again. You were talking about Coronado and the,
oh, yes.
and the student riots, that sort of thing.
The overall political climate of San Diego has changed in the past 20, mm-hmm. 30 years.
You think it was essentially, though, the presence of the Navy after, you know, the post-war years and all that, the presence of the Navy that made it fairly conservative?
That was an important factor.
And things like standing up for minorities, standing up for unions, things like that were frowned upon.
They didn't exist.
Okay.
Didn't exist to any appreciable extent.
I see. Okay. This one thing. Yeah, Dr. Steinmetz called his removal very disruptive of the work of the department. Now, I know he had to be replaced in terms of the classes and all that, but there's a hint there that he was involved in some research or something like that. Do you recall anything he was involved in at the time he was ousted?
No. He's written some articles from time to time, but he was never very productive as a research scholar. Mm. He may have been doing some kind of investigation at the time that he was discharged. But
so probably he's just referring to the fact that his classes have to be filled by somebody else.
Yeah.
Okay. Wow, this has been very helpful. Is there anything else that comes to your mind that would be particularly good
well,
to
I
note?
Well, I could mention some of the other members of the department who were present at the time, who worked at the time that he was teaching and were also present at the time he was discharged. And you might perhaps make an effort to reach them and get some additional information about his
okay.
relationships with the department.
I have a list here that I got from Dr. McKenna. The only one I've reached is Oscar Kaplan. He's the only one, apparently, that's still teaching here. The others, like Abe Nassiter, I'm not sure how to get in touch with him. And some others, but yeah, I'm trying.
Well, let me see the list. I'll indicate to you.